Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC, with the Restaurant Guys.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to the Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Kathleen Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can reach us through WCTCAM or RestaurantGuysRadio.com or download our podcasts on iTunes.
Morning, Mark.
Hey, Francis.
How are you this morning?
I'm very well. How are you?
I'm well, and I know that you today want to talk a little bit about interviews, because we've been doing a bunch of interviews for the restaurants, and they're always interesting, aren't they?
Francis and I have a great little system where you go through an interview process and you finish with one of us before you're hired.
You interview with the staff. You don't really even interview with management. You interview with various members of the staff, and then you do a trail in the restaurant. And then if you make it through and the rest of the staff, who admittedly has to work with you in a pool house.
Give us recommendations.
We will meet with you. If you make it through them, you get to talk to us.
Okay. So the final stage of the interview is meeting with us.
Usually they don't let through wackadoos. But sometimes...
But what I will tell you is there has been a magnificent group of interesting folks coming through the door. Anyway, I had one woman come in the door the other day, and you just know someone's BSing. And Francis and I have been giving interviews for a long time, and anybody out there, I'm sure a lot of you give interviews, and you just know when someone's BSing. And I guess one of my character flaws is when I know someone's BSing, I always dig a little deeper. I always keep going. I always ask for a little bit more information.
Well, it's a way to make sure that they're BSing, and a way to amuse yourself a little bit.
Just a small example. I had a guy the other day, and I'm asking him what he wants to do with his life, you know, as far as a career goes. And he says, I'd like to open my own restaurant. 10 minutes later in the interview, I'm talking to him about, you know, what are you doing after, this is a college student, what are you doing after graduation? Oh, I'm going to get an internship and go work on Wall Street. You realize that doesn't agree with your earlier answer, right? So I love catching people in those kinds of things, and I'm always surprised how much people will BS in their interview.
Oh, my God, people will just lie.
And I had a woman sitting in that dreaded chair the other day. And I began talking to her, and she really spoke a lot about how the restaurant business is my life. I love food. I love cooking. I love, you know, all these things. Well, and one of my favorite questions asked is, okay, well, if I'm paying for dinner, where would you like to eat anywhere in the world? Her answer, my dad's kitchen. Okay, you get to eat in your dad's kitchen all the time for free.
Right.
Okay. That answer doesn't count. Next answer. Here.
Also not allowed. Also not sucking up minus or plus 2 points, whatever it is, but a new answer. Need a new
answer.
So,
you know, this woman just keeps going on and on and on with bad information. Okay, so I know all about food. You won't have to teach me anything about food if you hire me. Really? That's great. Okay, so, yeah, I go to all the best restaurants. I go to Ruth Adams. I go there all the time. Ruth's Chris is, I'm pretty sure, the restaurant she was talking
probably,
about.
Probably, yeah.
And the other, she said, and I love caviar. Ah, really? Well, what kind of caviar do you like? Her response, beautiful, beautiful response. I like black and red.
Yeah, that's awful.
I was like, again, it's okay if you don't know about caviar. I'm going to be honest with you. 80% of the people I hire, when I hire them, don't know that much about caviar.
Dude, front of house, 90% of people we hire.
Okay, 90% don't know about caviar. That's fine.
Right, that's the thing. We'll hire people without experience. Well, I don't need you to have restaurant experience. I don't need you to have time going out for restaurant experience. But what I do need is you to be honest. And that's the funny thing is, you know, people fake experience all the time that, frankly, I don't care about. I don't give a rat's butt whether you worked here or there, because, you know, Mark and I view the philosophy, especially in front of house, especially if we're hiring for an entry-level position. I don't care where else you worked, because I'm going to teach you a different way to do things anyway. I can teach any hardworking, nice, dedicated, loyal, honest person how to be a good waiter. I can't teach someone who knows how to be a good waiter to be any of those other things, you know? But when you lie about it in the interview, man, you're lying about food. But that's the thing that always bothers me.
You're lying about food to the guy who has a restaurant for 18 years.
Right, right.
Really?
You're lying about food to me. You want to lie about, like, rocket science to me? I'm not going to figure it out. You know, you're not gonna know, you don't have to know that much to know more than I do. But you're lying to me about food and restaurants. What, you think you're going to get away with it? It's crazy.
So anyway, one of the things we do at the beginning of shift is we have family meal where we all sit and have dinner together. And, you know, the first bit of it is we kibitz and talk about the things that have happened to us over the course of the last 24 hours. And then we do some sort of training. Anyway, in that first little bit of family meal, how family meal works is you basically sit wherever you want. But what I'll tell you is generally those people who have only been working for a week or two for us, they kind of self-segregate.
Right,
they sit kind of at their own table away from anybody who might be intimidating.
Right, right.
Okay. Anyway, this girl sits right across from the chef. Okay, no problem. That's totally fine.
No,
Francis just remembered the story. Okay.
And Chef J.R. Belt, by the way, is the most even-keeled, intelligent, chef I've ever encountered.
Easily the nicest chef I've ever encountered.
One of the nicest guys in the world.
So she's sitting there, and she says something dumb, and he lets it go. And then finally she goes, you're the cook? And he goes, I'm the chef. She goes, oh, the chef, okay. So if somebody has a bad meal and really hates it, you're the guy I blame, right? And he just turns to her, and he goes, I need you to shut up and go to sit at the other table.
get up. Let's sit at the other table.
Go sit with the new guys. And it was one of those moments that, you know, again, this is a very even-keeled guy. He lets a lot of stuff roll off his back. And it was one of those moments that you just didn't expect.
And I thought to myself, like, haven't you even watched the Food Network? He said he's the chef. Oh, my goodness. I thought, you're not going
to
make it.
I need you to leave the table.
I need you.
Those types of things, they are priceless. I'm sorry. I realize that maybe I'm laughing at someone else's expense a little bit, but it's somebody who was totally trying to BS me. And if you totally try and BS me, I'm going to make fun of you.
You know, I want to ask a slightly different topic. Because of this system where we have the staff interview new staff before they get to us, we weed it out. We don't waste a lot of our time on people who make mistakes like that. When we interview back of the house people, though, it's a senior person in the back of the house, and we haven't hired anybody senior in the back of the house in a long time. We have a very stable staff. But we were interviewing chefs or sous chefs, and I remember this a long time ago, but I'll always remember this story. And I'm going to tell you about somebody who came who was offensive to us. So please don't, turn off your radio if you're easily offended and skip to the next segment when we have the guest. But I remember there was a guy, and I can't believe they're out there. And we hear the stories from our staff when they get people in. The people who get weeded out, they'll tell us the story of something crazy they did. But this guy was interviewing for a senior position. It was either sous chef or chef, and he had cooked us some decent food. But what he did during the interview process, I couldn't even believe it. I'm talking to this guy. I mean, you remember this?
Oh,
you know,
I remember
you know
exactly
I'm going,
the story. You're
going. And the guy says, so tell us about his last place you worked. He's like, yeah, it was pretty good. You know, we brought things up. It got boring after a while, and the owners weren't really – and they're saying bad things about his former employers, which is always a bad idea in an interview. And he says, but, you know, we did a really good job there. Oh, I remember the two things this guy said. The one thing he said was, well, why did the restaurant, you know, go down? He's like, customers.
Customers.
What do you mean the customers? Like,
I thought you were going to miss this one.
They didn't get what we were doing. I'm like – oh, but they did get what you were doing. You're going out of business. They got it. They got it exactly.
I was doing some really good stuff, and they didn't understand it. And that's exactly what he said.
And we're at the polite ask a couple more questions and end the interview part of the process. And we said, well, what did you do to change it when you went there to make it so much better that it went out of business? He says, well, first thing we did was we had to get mostly white people in the kitchen.
Amazing. Amazing. He actually said that. He actually said that in an interview to two guys. Again, at that time, maybe we'd been running a restaurant for 5 or 6 years.
And he didn't even notice that both of our mouths were agape. And then he said something. And then he said something disparaging about how, you know, but if you get Mexicans in there, he talked about Mexicans. He talked about black people. And I literally had a legal pad in my hand, and I threw the legal pad on the table. And
Francis turned, like, a three-quarter shoulder away from him.
And he didn't get that. He kept going. He didn't get that anything was wrong. And I thought, what planet how do you exist in this world?
I guess the point is, even if we were ignorant enough to feel the same way, why would you go out on a limb like that to in an interview? And that's, and I guess that's the double ignorance here. Even if I believed those
same
things.
You're a stupid racist.
You're a stupid racist.
Right, exactly.
That's exactly what it is. You're a stupid racist.
Oh, my God.
And as much as I can't abide racism, I can't abide stupidity almost as badly.
God. All right, well, that was our depressing interview stories. But we just like when we find great wines, we plow through all that chaff to find the glorious wheat, and we do have a great staff, I will tell you. It's really amazing.
Yep,
very happy. We'll be back in just a moment. We're going to talk to an Italian wine producer who you may not have heard of, but who has some great wines that are really reasonable and available, and we'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys on WCTC-AM and RestaurantGuysRadio.com. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. It's Mark and Francis, the Restaurant Guys, and our guest today is Giovanni Bonmartini Fini. Giovanni's family winery is the Barone Fini Winery in Trentino Alto Adige region in northern Italy, and he joins us. Well, he's visiting America right now and joins us today on the show.
Buongiorno.
Giovanni, welcome to the show.
Buongiorno, Marco. Buongiorno, Francis. Francesco. Francis would be Francesco.
I know. It could be Francesco for today. In Irish, it would be Pontius, you know, but says we don't.
My Irish is terrible.
Yeah, and Irish wine is worse, let me tell you.
Before going forward, I wanted to tell you that I coined the name of your show. I listened to a bunch of your broadcasts over, obviously, from Italy. I can't listen to it live, but I can download those podcasts, and I love doing that. So I've coined your show now the Risto Ragazzi.
Risto Ragazzi.
I like that
very much. We're going to have to get restaurantguides.ie, right? Or is it IT? Is it no,
yeah.
IT? Is it like,
yeah.
restaurantguides.it?
And I'd like a percentage of that business because I am very entrepreneurial.
Certainly. We will talk about the capital investment after the show. It'll be something you can, not too painful, I assure you.
Well, Giovanni, besides, you know how easy it is to make a lot of money in the wine business?
I know how difficult it is.
It's the same in the restaurant / radio show podcast business.
I believe it.
Well, we called you on the show because we wanted to talk about your winery, and I think one of the things that struck us about your message that you get out all the time, we should let the people in the listening audience know that you make Pinot Grigio and Merlot in the Trentino Alto Adige region, right?
Yes.
And something that you really harp on and really point out is that you say, I'll quote you here, you say, America is awash in cheap IGT Pinot Grigio, and you point out that your family's Pinot Grigio is a DOC Pinot Grigio. And for geeks like us in the wine business, we know exactly what that means, and of course it's very important, but I think this is an opportunity to talk a little bit more about what exactly that means, sort of the complex, what can be seemingly complex lexicon of Italian wine regions and how we judge, you know, different levels of quality of Italian wine.
Well, you just got me going on about 10 different things. How much time do we have on this program?
Well, the listeners are going to turn us off in a bit. We're going to turn us a little bit. You can keep talking. We can keep talking, but the show is only half an hour.
Only a half hour. That's a lot of time. Well, the first thing I can do is just in case, if people like what they hear, and I'll give them a good vehicle to remember the name of my wine that is literally probably one of the first Pinot Grigios to come to this country. About 35 years ago, my uncle started exporting wine outside of Italy. He was producing Pinot Grigio for the Italian market and then started selling it to the U.S. He loved the United States. I love the U.S. You can tell I have an American accent.
Yeah, you do.
And there's a good reason for that. My mother is from New York.
Oh.
And I actually went to college in New Jersey.
Where?
I went to Princeton.
Oh,
and,
just
and
south
one of
us.
One of the reasons, I'm actually sitting in a hotel in Chicago. I'm doing the thing that I love to do most, sell and taste people on our wines.
Mm.
And one of the reasons that I'm here in Chicago is this weekend I have my 25th reunion at Princeton.
Wow.
And so I'll be drinking a lot of beer, unfortunately, but that's what they have, and having a great time. But I just going back to remembering the name of our wine, They used to call me Teeny Weeny, although totally incorrect, Bun Martini. So if anybody has problems remembering the name of our Barone Fini wine, just remember Teeny Weeny Barone Fini.
Really?
I'm gonna have to disagree. I'm gonna have to disagree with you here and encourage the listeners not to do that.
Okay.
If you came out with airplane bottles, however, we would, you know, the little teeny bottles. Never
yes.
mind. That's terrible. All right, this was
going back to the entrepreneurial side, that's a tough business, and it's tough enough selling. Actually, I have to say that the main business that pays the bills is actually a toner cartridge. And I have a chain of 600 stores in Europe selling consumables for printers.
But the much more exciting thing to talk about is the wine business.
Well,
yes,
you know, but Francis and I, we find this a lot. A lot of times that people in the wine world basically have to subsidize the passion of making great wine.
Oh, absolutely.
With some other kind of business.
Absolutely. And, you know, I am so passionate about the wine. Just call it about wine in general. I do drink a half a bottle, and I have to hold myself back every evening.
Mm-hmm.
And going from there, just that I love the taste. I love to drink it with food. For me, it is food. In fact, wine in Italy is considered food. When it gets delivered, unlike the United States, that it's regulated by the ATF, alcohol, tobacco, and firearms. So alcohol in the U.S. is practically like explosives.
Uh-huh.
Instead, in Italy, it gets delivered with the fresh produce.
Right, right.
And I'll hit upon a little bit conceptually the concept of Pinot Grigio, which should be fresh and crisp and clean and natural, which are all basic concepts. And you'll see when we get there why they're so natural, the Pinot Grigios from our area, because of their heritage. But closing off on the toner business, that's what pays the bills. And to run a business, a growing business, we're growing about 30% a year. To grow a business in Italy and in Europe is about twice the energy, or maybe three times the energy it is to grow a business in the United States.
Why is that? Yeah.
I can write a book about it. We could do probably 3 hours on this radio show, but I can give you a couple fun examples.
Great.
For instance, banks don't give us any money. Why, you ask? Well, they don't give you money in the United States either, but let's say that Greece is a good example of what's going on, how difficult it is for us. Banks just don't want to risk their money on businesses. So what do we have? If we want to grow, and when you're growing, you need to get money from your own pocket in order for it to grow. But then on the flip side, the government wants to get their taxes paid first. And that is regardless of whether a customer pays you. And here's the toughest part. Customers don't pay in Italy. Some do, but most of them don't, or they pay very slowly. So what happens is we have to pay the profit and the sales tax, which is 20% VAT, in Italy, well before a customer pays us.
So you're paying on your accounts receivable even though you don't have the money yet.
Correct.
You pay your taxes.
Wow.
Yes. So that's like a financial difficulty. Then there's a million bureaucratic difficulties, and I could just go on for hours and hours. So for me, to go back to wine is like the passion of my life.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm married, I have two kids. Unfortunately, the passion of women, I had to leave that behind, so a good replacement is wine.
Well, I'll tell you, Giovanni, maybe the only advantage that the restaurant business has over any other business in the world is when somebody gets whatever you're selling, they pay you immediately.
That is an amazing advantage.
It is the one advantage in a world of perishability, exactly.
Yeah. But literally, when you walk out the door, you don't owe me any money. But the other thing is, you know, from the emotional standpoint, obviously we feel similarly about restaurants. And, you know, a good friend of mine is a guy named George Hendry, who's a winemaker out in California. And he said to me once something I thought was really wise. George is an older fella. George is in his 70s, and he's been farming the same farm since he was in his 30s or 20s. And he's also a nuclear physicist by training. You know, that's what he does to pay the bills. And, you know, he said he's one of the most intelligent and knowledgeable farmers in all of California. And he said something about his, you know, lifetime of experience. He said, Francis, agricultural experiments take a minimum of 1 year. You get one shot a year to try something different. You get one growing season to see what comes out. And sometimes you wait 5 years for the results. Now, Mark and I, one of the great things about the restaurant business is we're on the end of it where we're right there when we open the bottle of wine and pour it for the customer and look at them and they either smile or frown. You know, when we present our food to someone, they're right there. When we pour your wine to someone, you're in Italy, I get to get all the credit for all the hard work that you did, you know. And it's really, really gratifying.
And please know that we're not afraid to take all the credit.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, we picked this beautiful wine right off the shelf.
I'm going to tell you guys another secret. You make all the profit on it, too.
Yeah, well, talk to me about last year. I don't know that you'd – I think
well, you have the cost. You have the cost. But let me tell you, the FOB price of my wine when it comes out of Italy is very low compared to what you guys sell it by the glass.
Yeah, no, it's true. But, you know, it's funny. When we were recently at a conference where I know you go every year. We were over at Vinitaly in Verona.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we helped friends of ours who have import businesses to, you know, select wines and bring them over. And the bottle, as it, you know, the cost of the bottle of wine is really not related to what you wind up paying in the end, because by the time you add on taxes and shipping and storage and marketing and shipping samples and registering it in the United States and then registering it in the state of New Jersey, the state of New York, or wherever you are, and then holding the inventory and paying the in and out on the – it's like, you know, the cost of producing the bottle of wine, you know, that money's not going to the – winemaker.
Absolutely.
You know,
not.
There are a lot of people involved in getting that bottle of wine to you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there may be as many as four layers from the time you sell your wine to the time I sell your wine to the last person.
Well, I know one thing. I mean, all those layers, the people that do the most work,
mm-hmm.
okay, is the producer, I believe,
mm-hmm.
and the sales point, whether it be a restaurant or a store. I mean, mm-hmm. You have more labor per unit sold than, let's say, a distributor that has vast quantities of wine and they can load them up on pallets into trucks and stuff.
Right,
so,
we sell them one bottle at a time.
Right, they sell 50 cases at a time. We sell one bottle at a time.
And you have people to pay and, you know, families to maintain and health care to pay and all those things.
Yeah, so. It's a crazy situation. But let's get back to talking about
– Okay.
Let's get back to talking about –
okay, well, then I'm going to ask you, I'll get you going then.
Okay.
How old is Italy as a country? That's a trick question I always love to ask people.
I'm going to say Italy as a country is...
Francesco.
I'm going to say 100 years old.
That is very good. That's amazing. Most people fall in the trap thousands of years old. And so on and so forth. People that are mostly people that are in the wine industry or in the restaurant business... do know how old Italy is. The concept is Italy is a very old country. It's not an old country. It's a very young country. The regions are very old, and the origins are very old. But Italy was only united about 120 years ago.
Right. Well, and to look at those different regions, it's funny because we teach wine classes all the time, and one of the things that people say to us is they say, you know, it's why is this so confusing? And I always explain to them that, you know, the rules of making wine in Chianti, the origin of those rules in Tuscany began before Italy was even a country, and they developed their own rules, and the Veneto developed its own rules, and Alto Adige developed its own rules.
Absolutely.
And what we're doing is we're seeing the international market now, but those were rules that made sense when you were talking about regional economies.
Yep. So. Well, one of the guiding rules of winemaking in Italy, because the origins do go back to the Roman times, is the Romans just threw the grapes into big amphoras and let them ferment naturally. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Still today, the concept of Italian winemaking is do not touch. You're not allowed to add anything, nothing. They just recently, about a year ago, passed wood chips.
Mm-hmm.
So the Italians now can cheat a little bit on the wood flavor, but nothing else. I mean, I'm not even going to tell you what they can do in other countries.
Right.
Okay? But you can imagine. And in France, they can even play around with the sugars and things like that. All we do is we pick our grapes, crush them lightly because they're red grapes. Pinot Grigio is actually a red grape.
Mm-hmm.
And going back to Trentino Alto Adige, that region, in before World War One, the area of Trentino Alto Adige was part of Austria. Now, Italy was on the right side of the war the first time around.
Right,
and
right.
We won the war, and so we got a chunk of Austria.
Right.
So the people that work at my winery, the people that work for me, they speak Italian with a German accent. Buongiorno, Giovanni. And it's quite funny, you know, if you look at all the Alto Adige winery names, you know, some of the biggest names, they're all German names.
Right.
And my German is pretty bad, but anyway, they do all speak Italian.
Uh-huh.
World War One, the region becomes, before that it was Austria, and our wine heritage is Austrian, which is very different from, let's say, Friuli, that also makes Pinot Grigios.
Right.
And has a slightly different heritage. I'm not exactly sure of the heritage of the Friulian. But, you know, if we go back to the Romans, then we go, the Austrians have a huge influence. And also, our region, Trentino Alto Adige, with the Austrian heritage, is a very, very special geographic area of Italy. It's known for probably the best skiing in Italy. The area where our winery is actually, our vineyards are on the sides of beautiful mountains. I wish I could show you. I wish I could, but at least I'll try and let everybody imagine how beautiful it is. Imagine sheer walls of red granite jetting up, and then kind of, or let's say, from with a kind of a tabletop on top, coming down, and then all this gravel with a not so steep slope coming down into the valley, and that gravel is where it is terraced with our vineyards on them.
Well, and you know, it's funny when you talk about vineyards on terraced gravel or difficult soils, when vines have to work a little bit to survive, and when vines are subject to an alpine environment like that, they have very warm days and cool nights. That's called a big diurnal swing in the temperature.
Mm-hmm.
The grapes get all the benefit of all that photosynthesis during the day, and that cooling down at night really makes some of the best, is characteristic of some of the best wine regions all over the world.
Marco, I have a question about this Francesco guy. You said he's Irish? How come he knows so much about wine?
He's just been paying attention for a long time.
We Irish know our drink.
That's it.
Anyway, so you talk about what this unique geography imparts to specifically Trentino Alto Adige Pinot Grigio that is different from other Pinot Grigio.
Well, I'll get more into that more at right now. The Adige. Do you know what the Adige is?
I don't. You stumped.
It's a river.
Right.
People think of the region. They look at the DOC. Now, our wine is DOC. That means that our wine comes from a region. You can actually say it comes from this specific part. And actually, our winery is one set of vineyards on one mountain. And very specific, whereas most Pinot Grigios, and going back to that flood issue, it's mostly bulk. You have no idea where the wine comes from. It just comes from basic general areas of Italy. But our winery is on those terraces on the side of these beautiful mountains. In the wintertime, it's probably the coldest part of Italy. They get the coldest days. And in the summertime, believe it or not, they get the hottest days because as the sun goes over, the heat gets trapped in the valley, and you have the temperatures going well over 110 degrees. So you have these tremendous heat and cold in the seasons. And then during the daytime, in the summertime, at nighttime, because the sun basically stops shining in at about 5 p.m., although there's lots of sun, the tops of the mountains block it, and the vineyards are then in the shade. What happens is at about 9 p.m., 10 p.m., the cold air from the glaciers comes into the valley and cools the vineyards and the air down maybe to the 60s.
Wow, that's a
so
big
you get
swing.
Tremendous temperature swings.
Mm-hmm. And so let's talk about, actually, you know, we need to take a quick break, but when we come back on the other side, I want to talk about what this means, you know, what you see in the glass as a result of all this difference. And we'll be back in just a moment. We're going to talk more with Giovanni Bonmartini Fini of Barone Fini, Pinot Grigio and Merlot in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys on WCTC AM and restaurantguysradio.com.
Let me talk to you about lighting, and specifically about how you can enhance the appeal of any space. Lighting is a powerful, emotional, and aesthetic force. It's one of the most important elements of design. More than anything else, it sets the mood and tone for an entire experience. A room pops or it doesn't, based on lighting. Lights on 9 is a top-notch commercial and retail lighting supplier. Lights on 9 supplied all the lights for our award-winning Catherine Lombardi restaurant, inside and out, dining room and kitchen. Lights on 9 has everything from tasteful and stylish chandeliers to table and floor lamps to outdoor lighting for illuminating a building or walkway or a sign. At Lights on 9, the service is exemplary, expert, and knowledgeable. They ship anywhere in the continental United States for free. Their retail store is in the Galleria Shopping Center on Route 9 in Manalapan. They're open 7 days a week. Call them at 732-308-9166. That's 732-308-9166. Or visit them at lightson9.com. That's lightson9.com.
Hey there, everybody. Welcome back. It's the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis, and our guest is Giovanni Bonmartini Fini from the winery of Barone Fini in Trentino Alto Adige. We were talking about Pinot Grigio, do you produce more Pinot Grigio than anything else?
For the U.S. market, absolutely.
So we were talking about Pinot Grigio, and we're talking about yours coming specifically from the DOC, or the Denominazione di Origine Controllata region.
Bravissimo.
Grazie. Region of Trentino Alto Adige, compared with wines that come from elsewhere. And we were talking about the specifics of the place. How does that express itself in the glass? How is the Pinot Grigio from Trentino Alto Adige different from Friuli and Pinot Grigio or Pinot Grigio from other regions of Italy?
I'm going to say it in the quick response and then a little bit longer response. The best way to describe the Pinot Grigios from our valley are they're fresh, crisp, and basically can go with any food you can imagine. My favorite tastings are, I actually do some cooking myself, and I make this sugo alla bolognese. A true bolognese sauce has no tomato in it. I just put a little bit of onions, a little bit of carrots with some olive oil, fry them a little bit, and then I throw in three meats, pork, ground meats, pork, veal, and
beef.
Beef, exactly. I was thinking cow.
I got it.
and although I sound very American, sometimes I want to say the word in Italian, but anyway. And I cook this for about 10 hours. Excuse me. I'm getting hungry. It's like 6 p.m. for me right now, so it's dinner time. Actually, we eat dinner a little bit later, but I haven't had lunch yet. So anyway, I cook this very, very heavy sauce, very heavy sauce. And then I take it to a tasting. Everybody gets a little cup of it, and it smells great, and it's very dark. It's almost black-colored. And I ask everybody, what would you taste this with? And I have a nice Cabernet Sauvignon, heavy Cabernet Sauvignon right there. So I give them a glass of that. And then I give them a glass of our Pinot Grigio. I say, okay, who votes what's going to go better, the Pinot Grigio or the Cabernet Sauvignon, which is wood aged and everything. I get a nice California, you know, meaty cab. Well, what happens is everybody votes for the cab. But then, when I get feedback, 85-95% is the Pinot Grigio went better because it cleans the palate.
Right, right.
That freshness, it's actually an effect of tartaric acid, which is a pleasing acid to the palate.
Mm-hmm.
Cleans the palate. Something like, you know, when you're eating sushi and you have the ginger, cleans the palate from one kind of fish to another. And that's what that's the Italians' way of cleaning their palate. They like these fresh, crisp whites that are food wines.
Okay, I got a question for you now.
Yes.
Are you willing to part with that bolognese recipe?
Absolutely.
Okay, listen up, everybody. Go to restaurantguysradio.com. Click on the Giovanni Bonmartini Fini or the Barone Fini show. I don't know how it's going to be listed. And if you go to that show, you will find Giovanni Bonmartini Fini's recipe for a bolognese sauce without tomatoes. And we can try this at home ourselves. I know I certainly am. So
okay, well, I add water, but you can put some tomatoes. You cook it so long that the tomatoes disappear.
Well,
but you know, whatever recipe I send to America, people fool around with it.
Well, that's the nature of a recipe, right?
Right.
I mean, you know,
well,
it's the nature of Americans.
Yeah.
if you come to Rome, when you two, and I heard before we started this program that one of you, and I won't say which one of you, has never been to Rome, which is a cultural sin.
An actual crime.
Anyway, hopefully, when you two come to Rome, I'm going to take you to three Roman trattorias where they make the famous spaghetti alla carbonara.
Mm.
Carbonara is scrambled eggs with bacon on pasta. That is all, okay? Now, if you tell an American, cook with scrambled eggs and bacon, what are they going to do? That's not enough. We need to put something else. We need to put some onions. We need to put some garlic. We need to put some cream. We need to do this. We need to do well.
Yeah, you Italians don't know anything, of course.
We don't do anything. We do nothing.
That's funny.
Anyway, that's similar to our Pinot Grigio. I was getting back to this. We crush the grapes, and especially us.
Mm-hmm.
Our history. My family's been making wine since 1497.
Wow.
Right after they discovered America. Not my family, but let's say.
They were busy. They rushed
right back and planted a vineyard.
Boy, that was a busy couple of years for them.
It was. Well, we had to. That was once we discovered America, when we sold it off to the Spanish. Christopher Columbus,
yeah, yeah.
The idea.
Uh-huh.
We had to celebrate, so we started making wine.
Uh-huh.
But we actually do have Venetian documents. My family is from Venice. I'm Giovanni Bonmartini Fini the 26th.
Really?
So,
wow.
Yes, but I don't want to brag about
well,
that or anything. Like
I'm Mark Pascal the first.
I'm Francis Pichot Jr. I got two. Anyway,
well,
so
Giovanni, I want to ask you a question, and
yes.
And you may not want to answer this question.
Marco.
But here's your Pinot Grigio on the shelf for anywhere from $12 to $15. Okay, there are Pinot Grigios that, frankly, I don't like as well as yours.
There are Pinot Grigios that you despise, Mark.
That are on the shelves at $30 and $35.
Mm-hmm.
And I think ridiculous.
Why such a disparate pricing for, you know, well, I'll say wines of lesser quality because I can say that because it's my job to say that. But for two Pinot Grigios in the marketplace, why are the prices so different?
That's America.
So have we been snookered into those more expensive Pinot Grigios?
I'll tell you why ours is not expensive, and I'll tell you why the most expensive is the most expensive. And then you can figure out everything else in between.
Mm-hmm.
Ours is not as expensive. It was probably, if not the first Pinot Grigio to hit American soil, one of the first, but it stayed on the island of Manhattan because we had a distributor that was not aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
And my uncle was not aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when these families, when you have lots of old family businesses, generations, you know, tend to live different ways.
Mm-hmm.
And there was no energy put behind the growth of our brand. So it sat on Manhattan, and it was great. I mean, it grew very well in Manhattan, and we have a tremendous market in Manhattan. Today, I'm running the winery, and as you can tell from, one, the passion in my voice, the energy, I think I have quite a bit of energy. I definitely am driving our wine a lot more. I'm trying to make more quantity, sell it more. But this is, our wine has stayed the same in the last 35 years. It's the same label. It's a very traditional label. It's the biggest Pinot Grigio label you will see in any store.
Mm-hmm.
I dare any other Pinot Grigio to put that much paper on a bottle.
Oh, okay.
And it's got, and most of the label has is a huge coat of arms.
Uh-huh.
And my uncle made that label 35 years ago.
Right.
Now, what does that have to do with all the Pinot Grigios? Well, every year there's a new label out there.
Mm-hmm.
And because the market is huge.
Right.
It's gigantic. Pinot Grigio is the number one most imported varietal, and I think it's the most imported. It's between Chardonnay and Pinot Grigio, the most drunk in volume varietal in the United States.
So why are the expensive ones expensive?
Well, the expensive ones are expensive because they've built a brand that commands that price. Just like, you know, why is a Louis Vuitton bag more expensive than some other brand that's not well known, or why is this champagne so bloody expensive, and then that other, cava, the Spanish cava, is one third.
Well, I think though that with a lot of wines, the some are more expensive because the cost of production is much more expensive and the cost of land is much more expensive. Whereas what I know of these other Pinot Grigios, it strikes me just from what I know about the wine business that their cost of producing these big brand name Pinot Grigios are certainly no greater than your, and even lower than your cost of producing on a smaller scale at Barone Fini. So
that
it's not in the bottle,
true.
It's not in the cost of the wine. What is it all marketing and profit?
Well, it's profits. That I don't know. Now that the dollar is going up, the profits are going up too for the lucky Italians that are importing into the United States. It's been austerity for the last few years because of the dollar being so low. But I think when you say profits, everybody's got a different business plan, and it's difficult to say. But marketing is the huge difference. There are some brands out there that in America that are more expensive. I know that you have Feluga in your. That's one of the top. I love Feluga, and I hate to say it, but I prefer Livio Feluga Pinot Grigio to ours,
mm-hmm.
when I'm drinking without food,
mm-hmm.
as a sipping wine.
Mm-hmm.
When I'm with food, I prefer ours. And it also, maybe on a hot summer day, ours is fresher. But there's so radically different concepts.
I want to talk about a different thing. I want to take the conversation in a slightly different direction. I mean, Feluga is a producer whom we love, all of his
cuvées
and all of his wines.
Well, I was going to say that there are some other brands out there.
Yeah, that's what I want to
talk
about.
That are the best known, as big as Feluga, okay, but they're not. I mean, they make incredible wines. They're like in Tuscany, or they're in. They're also in Friuli. I'm not going to say the names. And all of a sudden, they're coming out with Pinot Grigios.
Right.
And mm-hmm. putting their name on that Pinot Grigio, and not only are they charging the top dollar, but they're putting in bulk Pinot Grigio in there.
Well,
and that is happening, and that's made me a little bit unhappy.
I think I also see in the United States people who spend a lot of money on marketing, who literally, we were talking about a producer that, you know, shall remain nameless, but they're a big, big name in Pinot Grigio that came into the American market in a big way in the 80s. And when the wine came into the American market, it was cheap, and
right.
it was really pretty good for the price. And now it's a very expensive Pinot Grigio, very expensive Pinot Grigio. What, three times the price of
Barone Fini?
Three times. And Mark, I haven't had it in a few years, and Mark just had it at a party at a friend's house the other day, and he's like, oh, what is this? I mean, if it were literally, what he said was, if it were $2, I'll go, and the only wine available, I'd rather drink a soda.
Right.
You know, and there's no, yet they get a tremendous markup on their Pinot Grigio.
Well, they get a tremendous markup because their importer did a tremendously incredible job.
Yeah, at marketing, not at making wine.
You know, they are doing, we're not allowed to say names, Bob, but they are doing actually a fantastic job of maintaining the quality standard in a certain extent because they're still DOC.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
I've got some other wineries, mm-hmm. other wineries that have, that are incredibly well known that are using IGT bulk wines.
Explain the difference between DOG and DOC and IGT.
Well, DOC simply means that it comes from that area. It means that the wine is guaranteed to be controlled by the government to be from that area, and therefore will be characteristic of that terroir.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Or that place. Yes.
IGT means it's indicated from this large territory. So let's say IGT Veneto. That means like basically one quarter of Italy. That would be the
right. The
right-hand upper corner of
from
Italy.
From around here is where it comes
from. Yeah, right around here. And With some, and also DOC means that every container that comes out of my winery, one bottle has to go to the local government lab and has to have a tasting analysis and a chemical analysis. So it's a government guarantee. And let me tell you the difference between IGT and DOC. It's the same as DOCG and DOC. Now, what is the difference between Brunello di Montalcino and a Chianti Classico? The varietals can be identical, okay?
Mm-hmm.
It's a government guarantee that you can call that Brunello di Montalcino, even though it's the same grape, it's a government guarantee that the yields are going to be lower, that it's going to be from that designated area, and it's going to have a certain amount of aging in wood barrels.
Just to bring everybody up to speed, we're really kind of splitting hairs and getting a little bit technical, but if you want to look at Italian wine standards, there's IGT, which is the entry level, and then there's the DOC, and as I mentioned before, that's Denominazione d'Origine Controllata, and DOCG is an even higher level because that means Denominazione d'Origine Controllata e Garantita, with a guarantee.
Garantita, yep.
Yeah, which is a guarantee, which is the highest level of government quality control.
Correct.
You have in Italy.
But we can't have that level with Pinot Grigio. Otherwise, I would have invested to get that level long ago, but this is just to say IGT means indicazione tipica geografica, so indication of that typical geographic region, whereas DOC means denominated and controlled to be from an exact region.
Mm-hmm.
And what going back to the French standards and terroir and everything, it means that our wine, being DOC, has to have certain characteristics that are guaranteed by the government by the time it comes here.
So let's talk about one of the things that you alluded to before is there are producers basically buying bulk wine, putting their label on it, and putting it out there. But can you just discuss that for a second?
Well, I'm not going to say names, but
some of
the best winemaker names in Italy, okay, to some very big, let's say, Tuscan producers, that buy bulk Pinot Grigio, put it in a bottle, and sell it because it makes big numbers.
Right, sure.
And, you know, that's okay. That's okay. I don't have a problem with that. I mean, obviously, Pinot Grigio is now coming from Australia, from California, from all over the world, and that's going to happen. It's just, I think that it's important that this... My favorite way of describing the Pinot Grigio that comes from our area, if you want to invest in something healthy, something that's pure, something that nature produced, okay, the taste is subtle, okay, in some instances. But so is the taste subtle between a drinking, the purified drinking water that comes in a plastic bottle and a mountain-collected spring source water that's put in a glass bottle.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you put those two and you taste one against the other, you're going to say the difference is not big, but your body knows the difference.
And
that's the same with our Pinot Grigio. Our Pinot Grigio is in the mountains. There's the rain is pure, the air is pure, it's beautiful. I mean, just go to that region and you want to drink the wine there because you know it's pure. And when you taste our wine, if you drink an entire bottle, you will feel amazing.
And if you drink three entire bottles, you'll forget the first. No, that's just never mind. It's terrible.
You're going to go nuts.
Hey, Giovanni, I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it there. We're out of time. It's been a fascinating conversation with you about your wine and about the DOC wines and about Trentino Alto Adige. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks, Giovanni.
Thank you, Marco. Grazie, Francesco. Grazie, Marco. Grazie a WCTC 1450. And grazie to all New Jersey listeners. I'm coming to New Jersey tomorrow.
He's coming. He's coming, everyone. You can find out more about Barone Fini Wines at our website, restaurantguysradio.com. And don't forget to go there and look for that Bolognese recipe from Giovanni and email us and let us know how you do with it. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys on WCTC-AM.
And try our Barone Fini Pinot Grigio with chocolate.
That's a plug. We're going to Oh, that's right, with chocolate.
With Marco and Francesco's chocolate. It goes like a dream.
We're going to find out more about that when we come back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys on WCTC-AM and restaurantguysradio.com.
Hi, this is Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants and also of The Restaurant Guys Radio Show.
You know, one of the best things about the restaurant business is the creative side of it. Coming up with big ideas and then turning those concepts into reality is awesome. It's what I love most about what I do. But it can't stop there. If you can't communicate exactly what it is you're doing, then you'll find yourself standing alone in your dining room, just you and your big ideas. The Mardini Group can help you get your ideas across to others. The Mardini Group is a boutique graphic design firm, and they do extraordinary work. We use them, and as you know, we only use the best. Whether it's menu design, product packaging, a corporate report, promo material, a homepage, or an awesome logo for a brand new project like Catherine Lombardi, we turn to the Mardini Group. Some small business owners don't realize how important it is to have a strong visual identity. Without it, you come across as less than professional. That can cost you trust, and that lowers your bottom line. First impressions count for a lot, and that's why you need the Mardini Group. Go to RestaurantGuysRadio.com and click on the Mardini Group link, or call them at 718-694-9944. The Mardini Group for graphic design, 718-694-9944. Hey there, everybody. Welcome back. It's Mark and Francis, the restaurant guys. Boy, that guy can talk a lot about beer. I'm surprised at how much fun we had with, not that I wasn't expecting him to be fun, but he was great.
He is full of life, no doubt about it.
Can I tell you something? For a winemaker, he's above average fun. For a toner cartridge salesman, he is a blast.
You know, one of the things he talked about at the end of that last segment was he was talking about, you know, the subtle difference of, you know, a plastic bottle of supermarket
water. Oh, I know where you're going with this. Yeah.
Versus, you know, a beautiful mountain spring water in a glass bottle. Francis and I just had the great good fortune of being at La Petraia.
In Italy.
In Italy at the top of Chianti Classico.
Top of the tallest mountain in the Chianti Classico district. We stayed at a little inn.
And one of the rivers actually begins on the property. And the water at this property, all served in glass pitchers all throughout the property, all through the day. One of my favorite things to have during the day was just a glass of water.
The water was
from
spectacular.
This place. What I said to Francis while I was there is, this water is so good, it feels good to take a shower in it.
No, it does. It was this spring, like Giovanni was saying, the spring at the top of the mountain on the tallest mountain. And you, by the way, look up La Petraia on our website. Mm-hmm. Do a search for La Petraia. It's an amazing inn at the top of this mountain. But you're absolutely right. That water out of a glass pitcher, so different than your water out of a plastic jug.
And again, subtle difference. You need to pay attention. Mm-hmm. But that's why Francis and I are here to get you to pay attention to these things.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to put one more thing on the market there. I knew the Adige was a river. I knew it. No, we stayed. But don't you? I didn't understand the nature of the
Because we stayed in a hotel that overlooked the Adige River.
Actually, it was called Hostal Adige, wasn't it? wasn't that the name of the place?
I don't remember what it was.
And it's funny. And I really knew the river because when we were at this Vin Italy wine conference, we were supposed to meet for dinner in the Keystone Copse of an evening. We're supposed to meet for dinner, and we're staying in Verona. And the Adige River goes through Verona, and it kind of winds around and loops around. Mm-hmm. Well, my girlfriend and I were leaving the conference, and we're taking the bus back to the hotel. We got on the wrong bus, and then we we're like, this doesn't look familiar.
Okay, first of all, realize Francis was leaving the wine conference when he got on the wrong bus.
It was professional. I was trying to get home so I could change and go get drunk. I was totally sober. But so we're on the bus and we're looking. I'm like, this doesn't look familiar to us. So we talk to the driver. Fortunately, Christy speaks a little bit of Italian, and we talk to the driver. We get off the bus. We wait for the other bus back into town. We get off in the middle of town. We think we know where we're going. We're talking to you on cell phones. We cross the Adige River going the wrong way because the Adige loops around this little – oh, my God, I was back and forth across that river so many times late to dinner. So I know the Adige's river. I almost jumped in it. Anyway, I hope that you've enjoyed this last hour as much as we have. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are The Restaurant Guys on WCTC AM and RestaurantGuysRadio.com.